Hello, friends. I'm Manuel Grady, and today I'm in Greensboro, North Carolina, with the Christian Family Online in America organization. I'm here to report on a new podcast that Christian Family Online is launching. It has an intriguing name, Saving Christianity. I'm here to interview the co-hosts of this unusual podcast, and their names are Owen Allen and John Shields. They're here with me now in the station, in the studio here, so let's start by greeting them. Hello, Owen, John. Good to be with you this morning. How are you guys doing?
Oh, thank you, Manuel. A joy to be here.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Manuel. I'm excited that we can be together.
All right. Now, let's start at the beginning here. So the name of your new podcast is Saving Christianity. So why do you think Christianity even needs saving? And Owen, why don't you just start? And then, John, you jump in here when Owen's finished, and we'll just get started like that.
Well, that's a perfect question, Manuel. And that is the title of my new book, Saving Christianity. And many people may see that in the bookstore somewhere and think, well, I didn't realize Christianity needed saving. But when you stop and think about it, in the Bible, both in Hebrew and of the Old Testament, Greek of the New Testament, and even the English translation of those two ancient languages, the word saving means the same. Mm-hmm. It means to preserve. It means to restore. It means to keep for future use. It means to deliver from judgment. It has many, many meanings. And of course, I've studied Christian history and the denominations for most of my life, and we've talked about this, I know, off camera, but actually Christianity, if you measure it a couple of different ways, number one, as far as worship attendance on the Lord's Day, that has been steadily dropping since 1950. Most people don't realize that. And the most recent figure was that only 16% of the American population now attends in-person worship. And, of course, I personally believe now with the horrible 2020 that we've been through, with the COVID crisis, I feel sure that's 10% or less now. And here's the kicker. Those people will probably never come back.
Wow.
Surveys show that most of them either drop out of Christianity completely or they join some other religion like the New Age or whatever. Mm-hmm. But finally, another thing that we can measure is the decreased influence that Christianity has on America. We all know that in the 16, 17, 1800s, church buildings and the Christian experience was central in communities.
Absolutely.
Even many times the so-called church building doubled as a classroom, community center, all of that for communities. All of that's over.
Yeah.
All of that's over. And finally, you can tell by the change in morality of the American, what I call the coarseness of American culture. I mean, I hear things and comments and words being used on network TV today by the news commentators that they would have been cut off the air 40, 50 years ago. But now that kind of language, that kind of slang is accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And so for all those reasons, I thought, well, somebody's got to do something. So with John's encouragement sitting here beside me, we wrote this book.
Yeah.
It published it in February of 2020, and we're very excited because we think we have some of the answers to this terrible crisis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. For me, Manuel, it's pretty ditto of everything that Owen just said. And a couple things really stand out for me, and one Owen mentioned, and that is the disparity between what Christianity is in its essence, according to not only what the Bible has to say, but how it's actually lived out. And when you lay that template over our culture and you see that the wide gap, and with that, I also see everywhere we look, there are people that are struggling and hurting, and and really, at the end of the day, I hope that the message of Christianity is the good news that we talk about.
Yeah.
But they've never really experienced it, and it's not because that Christianity has failed.
Mm-hmm.
It's because we have failed to understand Christianity for what it truly is. And so this is all in some measure trying to get back to that at the end of the day, to make a difference, a real difference in people's everyday lives, including ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the way we look at it, this could be somewhat of a dystopian, bleak outlook. But as mm-hmm. you said, it is the good news.
Yes.
It's not failed us. Perhaps we have failed it.
Right.
So, Owen, I understand the idea for the podcast came from your latest book, Saving Christianity, which was published this year by Seymour Press. Now, tell us why you wrote the book and what the book is all about.
Well, we've really, I guess, been touching upon that already, Manuel, mm-hmm. but what I have discovered in my life, frankly, since childhood, is that there's an old saying that a friend of mine used to say, don't you think God's bigger than what you see on Sunday morning? In other words, the traditional denominations and the traditional worship services, and I'm sure we'll get into some of this as we go along, but they bear no resemblance at all to the kind of worship experience that Christians had, what I call the original Christians, in the first three centuries of Christianity.
Yeah.
So I made it my business some years ago to study what was it that they did? Why were they different from Christians today?
Mm-hmm.
Where did their power come from? Where did mm-hmm. the healings and the visions and the other wonderful experiences come from? And so I began to study all of that, and I feel like I found some of the answers, and so I wrote the book to put those answers on paper so other people could see them and read them. And so essentially then, what is the book all about? It's all about what is, or I should say, what was Christianity originally, and how can we get back to that, what I call Christian experience mm-hmm. today? John already touched upon that. And there's a little motto that I use, if we do what they did, we'll have what they had.
Right,
and so that's the theme of the book.
Right,
and
right.
Manuel, I want to jump in and sure. just say, you know, you don't know what you don't know.
That's one of my mottos.
what we've seen is so many people that are not engaged in faith with mm-hmm. Christ, they really haven't rejected and what God's word says, but they have rejected this really distorted, confused, generic part of what the authentic faith is. And so what we're hoping through the book, the podcast, to any and all means that God allows, is to help people to come back to see the original template, the original blueprint.
Right.
And at least be able to make a decision based on that which is accurate.
That's good. You know, I learned many years ago from one of my mentors, you know, to piggyback on that, is all you know is not all there is to know.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing from your statement
that
people haven't rejected the person of Jesus.
Right.
They may have rejected our presentation.
That's right.
That has been in error.
Yeah, exactly.
Our lives inform us of our world and why we get involved and what we get involved mm-hmm. with, how, you know, it shapes our worldview and even our view of Christ. So on a personal note, tell us a little bit about your background, where you're from, if you have children, and what's your career educational background?
Well, also let me say, tuck in sideways here, something that should be evident from what we're saying, and that's this. There are many, many religions on earth. Many mm-hmm. people have never stopped to think about that. Some sources say there are 400 major religions on the planet. Some say many others. But of all of those religions, of all of those religious experiences, mm-hmm. Christianity is the most amazing,
yes,
stunning,
absolutely,
power-filled, rewarding,
real,
exciting
yeah.
religion on the face of the earth. And we just want more people, even professing Christians who are not experiencing that, to start experiencing it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Now, about me, I don't like to talk about myself much, but as one of my editors used to say, I'm the oldest horse in the barn. Joanna and I have 4 children, 12 grandchildren, and so far 8 great-grandchildren. Wow. So we have a fairly big family, but I am a Floridian.
Okay.
My parents lived in Jacksonville, and then when I was 8 or 9 or 10, I don't remember the age, we moved to Tampa, and I grew up in Tampa, had a wonderful experience. We were on a ranch there and just many things I could talk about. But it's the age of 17, I joined the Marines and left Florida and never went back except for vacations. I've lived all over the country, St. Louis, New York, Chicago, different places. And as far as my career, when I was in my 30s, I started my own consulting company and ran it until just recently, international practice in problem-solving, decision-making for companies. I'm sure we'll come back to that in a few minutes. Educationally, I guess I'm what they call a professional student. I started in the 50s, and I still study today. So, but my degree is in organizational behavior. We'll probably mention that again. But it finally occurred to me, why didn't I take the principles that I was using with team building, for example, with my clients, which were companies like General Electric, John Deere, Hilton Hotels, why didn't I take what I was teaching those people and apply it back to Christianity? Because it gradually dawned on my addled brain that the small groups they had in the first, second, third centuries really are what we call teams today and team building. So that's where all of this folded into the book, and we put a Christian spin on it. I've been a Christian since I was 11, been disillusioned most of those years, as John mentioned.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit about me.
Okay. Now, let's get back into our subject matter here, because the question comes to mind, if things are so bad in Christianity, then how do we explain the growth of megachurches? I mean, I know of megachurches that have 2,000-3,000 members and more. And so I would be willing to wager that their pastors don't see a problem with Christianity because of the nickels and noses, the money, the attendance, and things like that may, in some people's minds, reflect a certain degree of success and even favor from God. So you guys, Owen John, speak to that.
Yeah, I would say to that it gets back to how you actually measure that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. If you're measuring it in numbers, then for sure they people wouldn't see a problem with that. But
right.
But if you look beyond the numbers and look at people actually,
that's a good book title for your next job.
Yeah,
beyond the numbers.
Right. Beyond the numbers.
I like that.
Yeah. Of how they are actually living their life. What are they experiencing in their daily walk? And the influence or lack thereof we're having on our communities and in our culture at large. Then you don't have to go very far to see that Houston, we have a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, and you're filling on that.
Well,
all the numbers, the big buildings.
And yeah, see, there's another way to look at that, too, because back some years ago, there were only 5 or 6 mega churches in America. Now, that's measured as a minimum of 2,000 worshipers every Lord's Day.
Right.
Now there are, our last figure I saw was about 1,500. So they've jumped from 6 or 7 to over 1,000.
Sure.
So people say, hot dog, look at that. There's no problem in Christianity. And many of those pastors will say that on radio and TV. They don't see a problem. But let's stop and think a second. Why are the mega churches growing? Where are those people coming from?
All right.
Because we know that the pool of Christianity, I'm sorry to say, is shrinking. We know that several decades ago, 91% of the American population professed Christianity.
Right.
Today, only 71% do, and it's dropping. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's happening, then where are the mega churches coming from? And what analysis shows is, as the smaller churches fail and close, and we'll probably come back to that thought, those survivors are looking for somewhere to go.
Yeah.
Half of them stay home.
Yeah.
The other half look for a mega church.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much, mind you, for the spirituality of
sure.
it, but for the excitement in the programs,
all
the
right.
scouts and the concerts and all the hoopla that the mega churches can offer that attracts people. So what the pastors of the mega churches, many of them I know personally, don't realize is that they're getting survivors of a disaster.
Wow.
Their church is not an indication that Christianity is successful and growing.
Right. And so that becomes a cannibalization of the church, kind of feeding, you know, off itself.
That's
it's like
good,
it's parasitic.
Good, great way to say it.
There was a pastor that told me years ago, he said, basically, you know, mega churches says swallow up was his term, you know, smaller churches.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this, I want to be delicate here, but this is inbreeding, for lack of a better term, where we're not really
that's
winning
right.
people to Christ. We're just shuffling the cards back and forth, you know.
Yeah.
And so based on this, when I think about the numbers, the question we're dealing with, John, there are a lot of things that are big. You know, years ago, I had some swelling in my arm.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was really thin, so you could tell how many years ago that was, and maybe 160 pounds back then.
Yeah.
And it looked great. I was like, look at that. It's like a muscle, but it was swelling.
Right.
And the Lord spoke to me, swelling is not growth.
Correct.
So there are a lot of things that might be swollen and large, but it's not necessarily growth.
I love it. Yeah.
So when we look at this, if this is true, let me ask you this. And can either of you give our listeners an example of a church building closing? Because to be honest, I haven't seen any church buildings closing in the neighborhood.
Well, let me take a shot at that before John. statistics show that several thousand church buildings are being abandoned each and every year.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, for example, where we live in the state of North Carolina, in the past 3 or 4 years, four real estate records show that 40 have been abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And in the county in which I live, the past couple of years, 10 have been abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
So that's telling you that the population is shrinking and there nobody's attending, so they close up these buildings.
And you said the past couple of years, so we cannot blame this on the pandemic.
Correct.
Exactly.
Oh, that's correct.
Exactly. And so I can give you a very painful example.
Mm.
My wife's, Joanna's home congregation was in Greensboro, North Carolina. And several years ago, they were down to 10 or 11 attendees. Now, when she was a young woman and young girl, they had several hundred.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So they padlocked the building with everything completely as it was. There were hymn books on the pews. There were files on the pastor's desk.
Wow.
The library was full of books. They padlocked the building. They kept the heat and stuff on. For several years, they couldn't do anything with it. Recently, about a year ago, they had their final reunion.
Mm.
I went to it with my wife. They had a covered dish dinner. Everybody hugged and cried, and then they bulldozed the building. And today it's a parking lot.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is not a random experience.
Right,
is a national experience.
Right,
And that's why we're alarmed, and that's why we wrote this book.
Yeah, and from our studio here, Manuel, we could leave here and within a 5-mile radius of this place. I know for a fact that there are church facilities, church buildings all around us that are week to week that have, you know, 20, 25 people.
Right.
And no prospect for growth in any way. And so it's just, unfortunately, unless something, God intervenes, that's going to be the story of these other congregations as well.
And that's dire because the tributaries of the effect of that, the collateral damage of that, are more far-reaching than we even have time to discuss in this particular episode. Yeah. Because when that happens, a pastor, a leader's self-worth then comes into question. Mm-hmm. You know, what am I doing wrong? What's wrong with me? And maybe some of the congregants may say, well, only if you had, you know, if you had been here, my brother would not have died, Jesus.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so there's so many other things we see with pastoral depression and unfortunately,
and suicides.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
That's there. So I've got to confess to you guys, but to be honest, I did some research now before I came to the studio today, and I do know that what the two of you are saying is true. Mm. There are a plethora of churches that are closing. So, you know, we've given this interview the title, Where Have All the Christians Gone? Where have all the Christians gone? And I know some people may think that's fantastical or whatever, but I actually did find that the Christian population in America has shrunk. And as we said, you know, when you look at the statistics from 91% to 71% in recent decades, 20% drop in the Christian population. So we're in a real situation here. Actually, I did find that worship attendance has also fallen from 50% each Sunday, which any kind of attendance where you can get half of the populace out, whether it's a football fan base or whatever, that would be great. 50% each Sunday to 16% each Sunday in just a few decades, and that's a 34% drop in attendance.
Correct.
That would shake the knees of any of your corporate clients away, from Hilton to anybody to have that kind of drop.
It's a free fall.
It's a free fall.
Yeah.
Mm. So I see what's motivating you guys. So tell me this. What makes the two of you think that your Saving Christianity podcast can help in the crises that we're facing in Christianity?
Well, let me take a shot at that first, and then John can pick it up. You know, there's a beautiful scripture in Hebrews that says, Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so when you stop and think about it, the spirituality, the spiritual power of Christianity is the very same today as it was in the first century when Christianity was founded. The question now becomes, well, then what's happened? Because many Christians today do not have the power, the spiritual power, the gifts, the fruit of the Spirit that they had in ancient times. So where did it go? God didn't go anywhere. The Holy Spirit didn't go anywhere. The fruit and the gifts didn't go anywhere.
Wow.
So what has happened? And that was the question I set out to solve in my book. What happened to the power, and can we get it back? And I found both answers, and they're in that book.
Yes.
So that's the way I feel about it.
I would just add to that also, for both of us, Owen is a little bit older than I am. So he experienced this earlier than I did.
Right.
But
right.
Nevertheless, we both have experienced it. For me, it was early on in my Christian experience in the early 80s. Where we lived out, both of us, we lived out in community of what the book is about and what we're talking about, and quite frankly, we miss that, and we know that it's we know that it's real, that it's available, and we just we know that we've got 20 centuries of sediment to dig through, but we feel like it's worth the dig.
Yeah, a little bit of spiritual archaeology going on there.
Yeah.
So as you mentioned, you guys have been friends for 30 years. You know, that's worth the price of admission to a podcast in itself, as it relates to relationships. And so what did you guys meet, and how have you remained friends for all those many years?
Well, for me, I met Owen first when I was a young Bible college student, preparing to vocationally serve as a minister, and we were friends, and it just was, not to have a cliche, but mm-hmm. it was just a God thing.
Yeah.
I don't know that he necessarily looked at it like I did, but particularly I saw him as having so much more life experience than I had, and mm-hmm. Whatever I could learn from him to help me, I knew that would be beneficial, and it was just a like-mindedness
right.
From the beginning, and I saw him as a Paul,
mm-hmm.
and I was a Timothy.
Okay.
And I think everybody needs a Paul and a Timothy
Absolutely.
In their life.
Absolutely.
And so that circumstances, I moved away for a while, and then I moved back, and the busyness of life. But mm-hmm. we were able to really get back connected in 1994.
Okay.
And we've been on the friendship, deep friendship, working together ever since then.
And from that, tell us a little bit about your background, you know, wife, children, and where you've worked, education, career.
Yeah. Well, Owen is a Floridian, and I'm a Virginian.
All right.
And
that sounds like a football rivalry,
yeah,
right?
It does. Yeah. But I grew up in Virginia, in small town, rural Virginia, worked mm-hmm. on a farm mm-hmm. all my life growing up. Actually thought that that's where I would actually be born, live, and die.
Right.
And that
right.
was kind of my worldview.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, God had a bigger plan than that. And when I came to faith, when I was about 21 years old,
okay.
I came to faith, and it's been quite an adventure since then. I'm married, and my wife's name is Kit, and we have four children that are grown and gone now. And,
hallelujah, right?
Yeah, it's just us.
I got one that was grown, and she came back.
You're right, yeah, you know. Boomerang instead of an
yeah,
arrow. Yeah,
you know.
Right. Yeah, and just us and the dog, and I went to Bible college, and finished Bible college and went to seminary and mm-hmm. graduated from seminary, and I've been pastoring for vocationally for almost 30 years now.
So you have a degree in theology.
Correct.
You went to seminary.
Mm-hmm.
But did any of that prepare you for what we're facing today in Christianity?
No.
Yeah. Are you sure? I'm going to give you another shot at
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
any of that
yeah,
prepare
yeah.
you?
Yeah, I don't have to think long and hard about that.
You have to vet that with anyone.
Yeah.
You know. Okay, let me ask. As a full-time pastor, does it make you uncomfortable to be the co-host of a podcast that says Christianity is in trouble? What do your members think, your congregation think about your podcast and these things going public? Because we're kind of talking about the family
yeah.
business now, you know,
right.
some of the things that we used to cover, thinking almost to the point, you know, what happens in this house stays in this house, but
yeah.
The house has a leak in it.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, no, I I'm not uncomfortable at all in it. In fact, it's a breath of fresh air for me.
Right, it's refreshing.
Yeah, it's extremely refreshing. You know, it's one thing to see the problem, but it's another to be able to work towards a solution.
Absolutely.
I was working and during a break in ministry a few years ago, and The gentleman I worked for every morning at our staff meeting, he would tell us that if you bring me a problem, then you need to bring a solution with you.
Yeah, I've heard mm-hmm. that, two or three solutions.
So,
yeah.
You know, we've been, you know, in different circles, we've been people see that there is a problem. They can't put their finger on what that problem is
yeah.
exactly. But nevertheless, we know that there is one. Mm-hmm. And so we've been able to really identify that problem, what we perceive it to be, and not just talk about it, but let's look for a solution. And we believe that we're on to
yeah.
to the solution to this.
And it's so true, because the reality is that as it relates, the emperor has no clothes.
Correct.
And we don't want to talk about the fact that the emperor's up there, you know, unclothed, but it is evident. And we have hidden it behind things like, oh, we're in transition.
Yes.
It's a shaking. It's a falling away. It's a dividing asunder.
The great revival's coming.
Oh, we've dressed it in so much, you know, religious language as an excuse so as not to deal with it. And I think it's important because our people see it.
Yeah.
They see when they come to church that it's fewer and fewer. Yeah. It's less and less passion. So, Owen, okay, I'm asking you the same question. Your education is in organizational behavior. And so you were formerly, as you mentioned, a management consultant for Fortune 500 companies, John Deere, General Electric, Hilton Hotels, among them. So why do you think the principles of organizational behavior can help the crises that we're in Christianity? And first of all, for our listeners, describe what organizational behavior is in a vocational capacity.
Yeah, well, if you go to management schools or schools of management, one of the majors that you can major in is organizational behavior, which we students called OB for short. And organizational behavior is a new discipline. It's 20, 30 years old. It's composed of math and stuff, which had been around for centuries. It's a combination, actually. It includes psychology, sociology, archaeology, anthropology. All of those are mixed together. And I had courses in all of them. And I studied intently and did a lot of work in human personality, why people do the things that they do, motivation, all of those areas. And so you can obviously see where that not only helped major companies that I work with, and I tell some stories about that in the book, but also you can see that why you eventually swing around and focus that on Christianity and what's going on. For example, Gallup polls are extremely interesting, and most people know what a Gallup poll is. I knew George Gallup personally. He's deceased now, but one night we were having dinner in Washington and talking about, he, by the way, was a strong Christian and was very concerned about what he used to speak on TV about the problem that we're talking about. So we were talking about when he does Gallup polls of Christians and asks their behavior question, asks them, how do you feel about morning worship, for example?
Right.
How do you feel about the congregation of which you're a member or of which you just dropped out recently? And the answers were always the same and have been for decades. Imagine this now, you know, fasten your seatbelt, because the Gallup polls show that most Christians, even those who are active attendees, think about that a second, will tell a pollster privately that they feel that their congregation is hypocritical, that their congregation is irrelevant, that their congregation really has no impact on their life at all.
Sure.
So you say, well, why do you attend then? And they say, what choice do I have?
Right.
It's either that or stay home and read a book, you know? So it's horrible. It makes you want to tear your hair out.
Right.
So to answer your to answer your question then, how does organizational behavior fit the picture? I touched upon it earlier, but I did a tremendous amount of training and what we call teams and teamworking for these major companies. I did this for years, and it would completely revolutionize their production, their productivity. You say, well, who cares about that? Well, wait a minute. Shouldn't Christians be productive?
Absolutely.
Shouldn't Christians be concerned with productivity? The only difference is we're not producing lawnmowers. We're trying to produce spiritual people.
Absolutely.
Whereas many people today, of course, are non-spiritual or unspiritual, if you want to use that word. So I believe that the principles that worked in my business career as a consultant and as a trainer and as a business writer. I wrote a number of business books before I wrote this Christian book. they apply just as well because behavior, motivation, and human nature are the same everywhere you go, whether it's in a John Deere or whether it's in your local Christian congregation.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so there's an old saying in management, recognizing that a problem exists is half the solution.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I recognize that a big problem exists, and so now we're trying to craft a solution.
That's good. That's good. You know, in my pastorate many years ago, I would do a, you know, we have the State of the Union address by the president, and I would do the State of our Church address. And one of the things I did that a lot of pastors thought perhaps wasn't a good idea is what you recommended. I would put out a survey, and among those questions, it would be like, what do you not enjoy? You, like you said, you know, well, so it's hypocritical, it's whatever, but it helped me, and it helped me to, you know, tune up myself. And a lot of, I think leaders don't want to self-evaluate.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't self-evaluate, you end up doing an autopsy of your ministry. You know, so it's better to go to the doctor in the natural and in the spiritual. You know, well, gentlemen, let's summarize our discussion to this point so our listeners can get a good overview of what we've been discussing here. So given all that we've said today, let's ask this question. Don't you think that people today are too educated and too technical, perhaps too busy to be bothered with a deeper walk in Christianity? And on you first in John, you know, one of the things we have on Sunday morning, it used to be that it was unthinkable when you were children, even me, I'm only about 10 or 15 years younger than you gentlemen, to wake up on Sunday morning and if you were a Christian household, not go to church.
Correct.
Now we wake up and we're making up our mind, are we going to church? Are we going to golf? Are we going to brunch? Are we going to Cracker Barrel? The options, the options that we have made level with our worship is a little bit disturbing to me. So, John, we start with you. Are we too technical, too educated?
Well, Ian, the answer to that is that is a hindrance. And no question about that. We recognize that. But that being said, the other side of that is no. there's we also recognize that the masses, you know, God has a heart for the masses, but we also know that the masses have not, will not respond. So we believe there is, I don't know what percentage, we don't know, but we believe there's a fairly large percentage of people out there that are, despite those distractions, are searching.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they are actually searching, and they in their life, if they were Judgment Day honest, is empty.
Yeah.
And they feel that emptiness, and now they try to fill it, of course, in a thousand different ways. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's empty. And so, yeah, we definitely we believe. You know, we're not arrogant or as the Bible says, we don't think too highly of ourselves to think that we've the only two people that have figured out the problem. But nevertheless, we do believe that this is of God.
Absolutely.
And this is of the Spirit, and that and so we're following his leading. It's not just Owen and I. It's not our just a good idea, right? We came up with. So therefore, we're trying to do our due diligence.
Exactly.
And the results are going to be, we're swinging for the fence.
We have to.
And so we're. The results, we're going to just trust to him.
Yeah, the stakes are too high to bunt right now.
Correct.
You know, we've got to swing for the fences.
Yes.
And, and not to be overly dramatic, but, you know, at one point the Lord said, I've got 7,000 more that haven't bowed the knee when someone thought that maybe they were out there by themselves.
Right.
And the fact that I'm at this table with you gentlemen in the studio, I think is symbolic of the many like-minded men and women that have a true concern for this.
Correct.
And maybe have not found a platform, which is why I'm so excited about the podcast. But same question to you on, as we look at people's busyness, the education, the technical acumen that we have, that perhaps we've ego, E-G-O, edge God out.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've sort of answered that roundabout way through several of our questions, but we said that the Holy Spirit has not changed since the first century. But think about it, neither have people.
Absolutely.
And a lot of times we don't realize until we read their letters and read the history, read the diaries that they left behind. The people in the first century, the people that I call the original Christians, were exactly the same as we are. Mm-hmm. They were very busy for one thing. Many of them worked, the old farmer said, from cane to cane. You know, they can't see when they get up and they can't see when they go to bed,
right.
You know, from dark to dark.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them were extremely busy. Many of them were extremely intelligent. Paul, for example, had the equivalent of a doctorate of his day and was a very brilliant, educated man. Mm-hmm. So when you think about it, they were as busy. And there's another thing, one other real quick that people don't realize. Israel in those days was an enemy-occupied country.
Absolutely.
In the same way, for example, that maybe the Nazis occupied France in our time. The Roman army had conquered Israel and installed a Roman governor from Rome over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And soldiers dominated everything, and you had to do what they said. If a soldier stopped you on the street and said, carry my luggage, you had to carry it.
Sure.
Those types of things. And then, of course, there were terrible abuses.
Mm-hmm.
And so think about it now. Here are these early Christians. They're living in an enemy-occupied country. They're surrounded by enemy soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
They're working from dark to dark. Mm-hmm. Many of them were highly educated. Of course, many were not.
Sure.
In those days, the average person couldn't read or write. But they were still bright. They were humans.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And they had all the feelings that we have. Now then, if they were driven and motivated and compelled to become Christians, there had to be a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I don't call Christianity a religion.
Right.
I call it an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then that experience goes deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
And you said you named this segment, this episode, Where Have All the Christians Gone?
Absolutely.
Well, I would say, why did they go somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Why didn't they stay where they were worshiping?
Mm-hmm.
Or why do they never worshiped at all? You know, there are many, many professing Christians that don't worship anywhere.
Absolutely.
As we've already said from the statistics. So there's much that we could say there, but let me say this. When you've experienced the deeper walk of Christianity, you're different forever, and you hunger for it forever, and you want more of it forever. And this is what we want everybody we know and we can contact to experience, and this is why we're starting this new podcast and we published this new book.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And you will know them by their love. It is an evolving, life-changing experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, friends, there you have it. This concludes today's interview with the co-host of Christian Family Online's new podcast, Saving Christianity. Now, this is a fascinating new podcast based on spiritual principles in this amazing new book, Saving Christianity. I think all of you out there listening to us will agree that this has been an unusual and an interesting interview. Now, I've read the book Saving Christianity myself, and I was just involved with it in its reading. So I'm looking forward to subscribing to the Saving Christianity podcast so I can hear its unique episodes. I hope you'll join me and subscribe to it as well. Just pull up your favorite podcast app or open your favorite podcast directory and click on the yellow logo with the sign of the fish in it. And by the way, while you're on the internet, go to Amazon Books or to the Barnes & Noble Books website and order a copy of this book, Saving Christianity. It's one of the most inspiring books you will ever read. I personally have recommended it and sent links to so many of my friends. And best of all, you can use your copy to read along with Owen and John as they discuss the amazing facts in the book during the episodes of the podcast. And now until our next interview together, This is Manuel Grady signing off for myself, for Owen Allen, John Shields. Goodbye from the three of us, and we pray in the future each of your days will be more spiritual than the day that came before. Be well.